Welcome to Teletext R, the sexiest teletext podcast on the internet. You're listening to the Teletext R After Hours service. Coming up on page 110. The interview with Paul Biffaut Rose. On page 111, Minitel Rose. Page 112, Turner the Screw. Page 115, Digitizer was very, very naughty indeed. Page 116, You can't say that on teletext. And page 117. Enormous outtakes. And now, we go back to the studio. And our guests.
That was horrible, wasn't it?
Well, it's going to work on the podcast, but you're just talking to me at the moment. I'm on the internet.
Well, hello there, Teletexters. I'm here to fix the pipes. But that's all, I swear. We won't be talking about anything naughty on tonight's podcast. No, just your typical wholesome, non-profane, universal-rated content to be found here. Right. Now the kids have gone to bed, it's time to come clean and admit this is going to be the dirtiest edition of Teletext R since that time Carl ate a whole rocket lolly live on camera. Oh, somebody really enjoyed that there, didn't they? And he's back again tonight. We have, making his fourth appearance on this, the fourth Teletext R podcast, it's Teletext's answer to Clive Sinclair, Sea Dog Carl.
Good evening to you. It's my fourth time here, and it just gets better and better and better.
Is it just as good as your... Sorry.
Is it just as good as your first time?
It's better than my first time. Can I do that as well?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, it is better than my first time. Yes, indeed.
Very good, Sea Dog.
Thank you.
And also tonight, making his first...
And also tonight...
No, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, stop it. It's turning me on a little bit.
Oh. And also tonight, making his first appearance on Teletext R, but certainly not his first appearance on Teletext, it's Teletext Limited's own Mr. Paul Biffaut Rose.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
So it's a very strange way of saying good evening. I'm slightly distracted because I've looked up a list of words beginning with C so I can think up new nicknames for Carl.
Oh, thank you. You're so thoughtful. Have you seen any beginning with C that really spring to mind?
Well, C-Man. That was on my screen there. C-Fowl.
C-Fax.
C-Fax.
Yes, yes. You know.
Yeah, anyway, I'll drop some more in as we go.
Right. Well, thank you very much for agreeing to appear on our podcast, Mr. Rose. We're indeed honoured that you should grace our presence, Sir Biff.
You're very welcome. Always a pleasure.
And to kick us off, we're actually going to get straight into the action tonight. To kick us off, we're going to go from one Rose... to another. So have you guys ever heard of a thing called Minitel Rose by any chance?
Yes, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, Carl?
I think it's some sort of service, but I'm not too sure. You'll have to elaborate to get us out of the dark here.
Well, would you like to take a guess, considering this is the After Hours edition of the Teletext Star podcast?
I wonder if it's some sort of chat service or something.
You could be right there. Do you know about Minitel, guys? You know what Minitel is?
Very small man called Terry.
Yes. Well,
did he have a wife, Mini June?
That'd be a show, wouldn't it? Minitel, Mini June.
The Mini Vickers coming round for tea.
And then Paul, you could be a guest, and it could be Minitel and Rose.
There we go. I could. A Mini Rose.
Mini Rose. Well, Minitel was France's answer to Prestel, which was the internet of the 80s, as we all know. And it was a lot more successful than its forerunner, because it provided users with free terminals. And so successful was Minitel, in fact, that it was only retired in 2012. Actually, after CFAX, I think. But one of the more popular Minitel services was the instant messaging service known as Minitel Rose. Which continued to thrive even after the internet arrived, because it provided a certain anonymity that the web could not. And Paul might be getting where I'm going here, bit by bit.
I think you're fumbling towards chat rooms, am I right?
Yes, indeed. Now, aside from the name, there is another link to one of our panelists this evening. Most employees of the Minitel Rose service were actually men pretending to be women. Now, Paul, I wonder if this is somehow an influence on a certain book that you might have written.
I can't say it was a direct influence, given that I hadn't heard of it before. There is a story behind where the idea for my ridiculous book came from, but nothing to do with Minitel, unfortunately. That's good. There we go. I've shut down that anecdote, haven't I?
Well, you could still tell us the story.
Oh, well, I had this friend who shall remain nameless, and it was in the very early days of the internet that I had a falling out with him, as you do when you're young. And I discovered his AOL username, and I decided to have some fun and get my revenge on him by pretending to be a woman called Loopy Lisa 21F and engaged in a sort of online relationship with him for, I don't know, a few weeks. And yeah, I ended up feeling really awful about myself because I wouldn't say he had feelings for Loopy Lisa, but he certainly revealed things that you perhaps wouldn't have revealed if he'd known it was me. But anyway, it did give me the inspiration for a book, which came out some years later. So, you know, I'm a terrible human being, aren't I? I would never do that.
Well, did the content in the book pale in comparison to some of the stuff that he told you before you actually started writing the book, the stuff that was off the record?
It was certainly, yeah, off the record, but no, God knows, some of the stuff in the book is just awful. I mean, it was so soul-destroying doing that. It really was. I'd sit there and just despair at men, really, and despair because I was one. But there were kind of glimmers of hope within there. You know, some of the men who I sort of ensnared in my dirty honey trap were actually quite sweet. There were one or two who were quite nice, and they kind of gave me a glimmer of hope that we're not all just awful monsters. That's depressing, isn't it?
No.
But I did get the phrase dirty honey trap in there. Which
dirty honey trap. I'm going to cross that off my bingo card. I had that tonight.
Is that the new version of phoning honey?
Dirty honey trap.
Dirty honey trap, yes.
Is that like Beehive Bedlam used to be on the Skybox?
Oh, God, I'd forgotten about that. Jeez, Beehive Bedlam. My kids used to play that.
Now, the music is going round in my head now. The tune that went over and over, yeah. From Dirty Honey Trap to Sky's Beehive Bedlam, yes. On their Red Button service, so it's slightly relevant too. So, yeah.
Slightly, yeah.
On the back of the book, I think there's a testimonial that says, I'm paraphrasing because I have the book somewhere, but it says about, it's the Time Wasters letters for the internet generation. Am I right in that?
I don't know if that is on there, and I can't remember because it's been a long time since I've looked at the book. I certainly wouldn't have put that on there.
No.
I know we had a quote on the front cover from Robin Cooper, a.k.a. a guy called Robert Popper, who writes Friday Night Dinner for Channel 4. Mm. And there's a quote on the front page because he very kindly wrote an introduction for the book, as I know him relatively well. But the publishers, in their wisdom, put the quote on the front cover without his permission. He wasn't very happy.
Well, it's just two words. Very funny. How can you complain about that?
Yeah, well, he did. So there we go.
No, really? That's incredible.
Yeah, well, they did promise to take it off of future copies of the book, but unfortunately, there were no future
pressings. I was going to say, I've got a limited print run.
Yeah, there's still plenty of them for sale for 1p on Amazon.
Well, the copy that I have in my hand right now has a 99 pence sticker on, and it looks quite old.
There you go. It is quite old now. It was 2007 or something like that it came out.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yes, yeah. 2007. First published in Great Britain in 2007.
There you go. It's quite an old book. It's almost an antique.
Oh. When we meet up, I'll sign it for you.
Oh, thank you. Could you sign it Season?
Yes, I can.
That was Season, by the way.
Season. Oh, right, we're still thinking of C nicknames. Oh, right, okay, so I want that as a Twitter handle for anybody who's listening to this show. Can I have some nicknames, please? Just hashtag them with C words.
C-Lant.
Yes, the North Sea.
Yep.
So, Paul.
Yes.
Would you have liked to do that for a living? Actually, sat at the other end of a computer and talk dirty to people for a living? Get paid to do it all evening?
No. No, that would be just horrible and soul-destroying, wouldn't it? You'd just feel awful about the human race, and I feel awful about the human race most of the time. So, yeah, that would just make it worse. Just add insult to injury.
Yeah, the problem there is, France, you got it wrong. Why did you introduce two-way connectivity on teletext? It should always be one way, so you avoid these problems.
Yes, broadcast only.
So, the Minitel Rose service also included crudely drawn girls in various states of undress. And I'm actually sure we're going to revisit Minitel Rose in a future edition, dedicated to Minitel itself, because it's a subject that deserves further exploration, I should say. So in case you're wondering, Prestel also had chat lines, but it's unconfirmed as to whether they were used by men pretending to be women. By which I mean, there is a strong possibility that Paul was using that.
Using what? Sorry? So I do apologise, I drifted off for a second there.
Oh dear.
I was still looking at the list of C words. Sorry, Dad.
That's okay. I'm going to try and deviate away from this script that I quite obviously have here now.
You quite obviously spent ages doing.
I've been seriously burned by the teletext legend now.
Oh, blame Seaman and... I'm terrible. I get these things in my head. Like, I don't know, I started on Twitter some weeks ago, gee up a movie, where trying to think of puns around the word gee and putting them into film titles. And it literally dominated my Sunday. My brain, I get kind of in a very sort of autistic way locked into this. And now it's like trying to come up with C puns. I'm closing the site down. There, I've done it. You have my full attention now.
So are we saying that we've sort of made a witch's post in your mind, really? Would you know the witch's post where the tour guide, he will go, here's some interesting paintings and all that, then you'd see this old post sticking out of the garden somewhere, and he'd tell the visitors, he goes, oh, that's where we used to burn the witches, and then he'd carry on telling everyone about the paintings, and everyone else is going, witches? What witches?
Oh, I've witches. Never heard that phrase. I really like that.
Yeah, the witch's post, apparently. That's,
I've never heard that. I like that very much.
Oh, thank you. It's not mine, obviously, but yeah.
That's going to be on Digitizer 2000 next
week. It will, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's a real witch's post.
Top 10 witch's posts.
Actually, that's quite a good idea. Oh, dear.
Right. You hear that? That was the script.
Oh, Dan. Dan, come on, Dan.
Come on. Dan, come on, straighten it out. Come on, start again.
Like the first episode all over again, isn't it? Just complete and total irrelevance, which I love.
You know what you should do as a screen? You know those, are they called looby-loos? The things, you know, when you kind of, you fold up some paper and you put your fingers in them and you go, kind of pick a number, 1, 2, 3, 4, pick a colour. One, spell out the colour and then it's pick up and then you lift up the flap and then that should have the next topic. Should do that as a script.
I should think she would get quite loopy. You stuck her fingers in it, and then you lifted the flap out.
Well, actually, no, forget that, because I have found a new script. Let's just look at that. Thursday, August the 21st. A new shop has opened on the high street, selling nothing but clown shoes. The shop was opened in a gala ceremony by some of Britain's most famous clowns. I've never heard of any of these clowns, but maybe you have. Rollo Coco, Rollo Benny, Herman and Bagel, The Tits, Jackie Lace, and Brunt. After the opening ceremony, the clowns went on a hilarious riot through the town, throwing bins through shop windows, setting fire to tramps, and stealing from Boots. And that was a document of the Tottenham riots by Loopy Lisa.
Well, there we go.
Different times.
And I laughed all the way through it. My own hilarity.
I'm surprised I made it to the bins part and I couldn't handle it anymore. I'm sorry. Oh dear, teletext. Was this a teletext podcast? I don't know. I can't remember anymore.
Whose door keeps opening? I keep hearing that. There's a squeaky door.
That's the mouse.
That's my pet mouse.
What's its name? Sorry, Ormos. This is about teletext. Ormos. Did you say the mouse is called Ormos? That's what it sounded like. Ormos and Ormos.
He just failed to get his leg over.
Please stop.
Oh, brilliant. To bring us back to teletext, even though that was absolutely hilarious. Where is that script? No! Right, so when Teletext Limited launched in the early 90s, it was a controversial service. So much so that the ITC received, and I quote, well over 100 complaints about Oracle's successor. Now, some of them may or may not have related to the after-hours service known as, well, after-hours, wasn't it?
Yes.
Is that right, Paul?
I believe so, yes. But what was Midnight Blue? For a while, I laboured under the misunderstanding that the section was called Midnight Blue. But maybe it was possibly called Midnight Blue before it went on air and then got changed to After Hours. I think it was.
Code name.
Yes, of course. Maybe. We're going to have to get Jason Robertson on this. Get some of these late-night screens for us. We can broadcast them to the internet. Mm. Speaking of which, these teletext pages were only broadcast from 10:30 p.m., and After Hours featured distinctly adult content that would put digitizers' game reviews to shame. Ooh. So, by all accounts, it was a very, very naughty service indeed. But not as naughty as the chaps who were writing for it.
Who were they?
Well, I don't know, Paul, because according to the ITC, early in the year, the ITC intervened in relation to the feature After Hours, which contained sexual material unsuitable even after 10:30 p.m. when it was transmitted. Teletext withdrew the feature. Now, what is the real reason this was withdrawn? And can you furnish us with some of the complaints? Or will you have the very pants sued from you?
I don't know. Depends if I misremember it. I believe there was an issue with one of the TV regions where, because I think the problem was that the After Hours section shared the same page numbers as the kids section. Who had that bright idea? It's just beggar's belief, frankly. And if I'm right, there was an issue with one of the TV regions that all the adult stuff stayed up during the day one day, so the kids went there for their jokes and...
For the Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, and got...
A different kind of Thomas the Tank.
They did indeed, yes, a big... Big, no. I'll change track there.
Change track.
Yeah, I think it was on that occasion that the problem pages were discussing a certain act that children don't need to know about.
Is that jumping the shark?
Yeah, exactly. Jumping the brown shark. On their pink motorbike. Yeah, so that's what happened, I think. I think that, and it was after that that the service got taken down. But I may be misremembering all of that, but that's how I remember it.
Okay. So do you actually remember any of the other content that was broadcast during the after-hours service? Is there anything really meaty, if you'll excuse the pun there?
I drew a cartoon called Turn of the Screw, which was about a prison officer, which was written by a guy who claimed that he worked for Viz. And he had originally approached us with the idea of running some Viz cartoon strips on Teletext. And I didn't mock up, off the back of his scripts, a Roger Melly man on the telly and a Sid the Sexist strip. But then Viz, who clearly had never heard of this guy, said we couldn't have the rights to it, so he came up with his own character who was called Turn of the Screw, which it wasn't very good, as I remember it. It wasn't very funny. It was a little bit more adult than Turn of the Worm, shall we say.
So this guy got the job, basically, lying off the strength of a supposed gig that he had with Viz, and when it was found that he didn't have this gig, you kept him on, or Teletext kept him on.
Yeah, well, he didn't actually work there. He used to send in, or fax in, if I'm right, the scripts. Those were the days when we had faxes. He carried on doing it for, I don't know, what was it? Lasted till about spring, I think, 93, the after-hours section. Sort of March, February, March time, I think, before it got taken down. So, yeah, so he carried on doing it for a good sort of 3 months or so into the service. That's it. That is all I have on him. I don't even remember his name.
Well, it's probably for the best, actually. Carl, do you have any questions on the after-hours service?
Well, I remember the out-of-hour service because it was one of the first things that was quite different from the Oracle service. I don't know if Oracle actually did have it or not, but it was more or less at the time where, you know, I was having access to the television and things. And I don't remember it being up for very long, but I don't even remember that Turn of the Screw, to be honest. So I'm probably the complete wrong person to ask about the out-of-hour service. Was that all part of the gig then? Because your main stock was digitizer, but was it because you were a graphic artist you were having to get involved with every other single operation on the service?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was employed as a graphic designer. That was my job. And even when I was writing digitizer more or less full-time, my job title was still graphic designer. I was never employed by them as a journalist. Until the day I left, really, and started working from home, and that was after I'd been working there for 4 years. So Teletext Graphics, you know, it's not like doing a piece of art on Photoshop or something like that. You know, if you're relatively competent, you can do the work quite easily. If someone comes over and says, can you draw a crab? It's like, there you go, I've drawn it. So I think they overestimated the amount of work that there was for a graphics artist, which is why things like Turn of the Worm and Digitizer kind of happened, because I was sitting around bored with nothing to do most of the time, so I was kind of coming up with ideas for other things.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the screen grabs that are now becoming available on the internet, thanks to people grabbing the services off of recordings and being able to archive them, there's some really good Turn of the Worm cartoons, some very vivid comic strips on there, and they're well worth a chuckle, and it's a shame that it seems that they've been a very well-kept secret for many years. And we're just lucky that people had SVHS tapes and they were recording things at that particular time to get the service off. So it's, you know, it's nice that you can be recognised for that again.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for me because, I mean, I'm loving seeing those Turn of the Worms being unearthed. You know, it was 20 years ago that I, more than 20 years ago that I started work at Teletext. So all those things are kind of well forgotten by my brain. So it's lovely seeing them again.
Yeah. So when you went and did a graphic, you know, like, so I came to you and go, oh, all right, can you do me a crab for my horoscope page or something like that? Would you have sort of like a template for that, or would you just did you just know how to do certain things?
There were certain sizes that kind of icons and graphics would have to fit into on the page. You know, if someone said that I need a crab page or the crab fishing page, or I don't know, the crabs page.
Well, this is the after hours.
That's the after hours. Exactly. Yeah, have a page about crabs, please.
You know, I'd have to keep the crab in a certain box. But there weren't any kind of pre-designed sort of templates. It was all, we did it all from scratch. I mean, everything in those early days, the logo, the size of, you know, agreeing what the logo would be on every page and, you know, how many pixels and the layout of the page. It was a lot of work in the early days, but once sort of Teletext was up and running, it was just every day someone would say, I'll write a story about this. Can you do me a little picture to go up in the top corner? But everything else, once the service had been set up, there was not a lot to do graphics-wise.
Did you ever have to, to take leave and let somebody else run it, and did they ever make an almighty cock-up of it while you're away? Did you ever go home because you had to take some leave and then you switched on Teletext and found, loco completely the wrong way around and you're thinking, oh, bugger me, that's me with some extra work to do tomorrow?
No, not really. I mean, we had, as time went on, they brought in other graphics people to help me out as they realised that sort of digitizer was clearly what I'd rather be doing. And there was a guy who actually I used to go to school with called Steve Horsley, who worked in the advertising department. So he did most of the ads for the service. I didn't, occasionally I think I did a few of them. But the only time things ever got messed up, and it used to really annoy me, would be when someone would be sub-editing the pages and then move a graphic down. So it kind of got corrupted by the automatic page numbering that was there. Because, you know, when they'd move that graphic down, the page numbers would, instead of appearing, they'd just corrupt the graphic. So you wouldn't be able to tell what the graphic was. That used to drive me mad.
And, of course, then you'd lose 10% of the content as well, because that shifted everything down a column, I guess, as well. So that could be quite frustrating.
Yeah, you know, it was always a challenge to get anything on a Teletext page and make it sort of entertaining and informative at the same time.
So if I gave you a choice then, and I said it's either palm trees or racehorses, what would you prefer to draw?
Oh, God, palm trees. Because I worked for Ladbrokes for many years before working for Teletext, and I drew millions of racehorses. I could draw racehorses in my sleep.
Can you draw them in real life?
I probably can't now. I mean, it's a long time ago. But yeah, I used to. I knew the anatomy of a racehorse inside out.
Because I can't draw a horse. I think that's on my bucket list. I think I'll draw a horse one of these days. They just look terrible things to draw in real life, and even worse to do on Teletext. When I have a little play with the Teletext editors myself, I'm always having to drag and drop a horse in, and it just always looks like a spider.
Look, I'm drawing a horse now. You can't see it, but I am drawing one.
Is it a good horse?
It's a good horse. No, I've drawn a horse. No. That's really cool. No. I can still draw horses. There you go.
Well, I guess we've all learned something today.
We have.
Paul, can you draw me a yak?
Ah, yeah, probably. There you
That's
go.
A horse with longer hair.
And horns, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it like a gnu? There you go. Here is the gnus. I've drawn you a yak.
Wait, isn't that a kayak? It's like a canoe.
Yippee-ki-yak, mother.
Mother paddler.
Forgive me if I've asked you this before, Paul, but how long would it take you to draw a typical full-page Teletext graphic? No, let's actually say a typical digitizer page with a nice third of the page would be a cartoon, the man with the long chin, or what have you, and the rest would be text. So how long would that have taken you to write and program?
Oh, not long. Yeah, really not long. The way I used to do it was often I'd kind of block everything out. It was almost like sculpting, really. I'd kind of draw the rough outline of the characters with four blocks first and then go in there and start putting detail in. So, yeah, like you're chipping off kind of bits of a sort of lump of granite, really, chipping out pixels into the bits of rock. But, yeah, I don't know, not long. I can't tell you exactly how long, but I am... Oh, I was, God, I'm years since I've done it. I can't even remember how to use Photoshop anymore. But I was fast. I was really fast. I know that. I think it frustrates my bosses that they give me work and try to keep me busy, and then I'm getting all done in sort of 20 minutes.
You'd have to try and slow yourself down to an extent, really, I guess, or...
Oh, no, I just spent the rest of the day messing about. That's mainly what I did.
Or go home early without telling anybody.
I did that as well, yeah.
I've read some your reminiscences of working at Teletext, and you said that you had extremely long commuter journeys of about 2 to 3 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
Was that the best time for you to get your ideas? I mean, would you be sitting next to somebody on the bus? You mentioned the blind lady who always had odd socks. Was that the sort of thing that would... You might hop on the train, and then when you get off at the other end to go to work, you had your brand new idea, and it just pushed everything down one level because you had inspiration on that journey?
I don't know, really. I used to read a lot rather than sit there and think. I think now I'm, the way I write the new digitizer, they're more sort of ideas-led, whereas the old digi, it was kind of quite formatted. So you had news, reviews, preview, letters, all right, you had the man with the long tune at the end of the letters page, but it was pretty much the same thing every day. So it wasn't like I had to think up what we're going to write. I think we have one feature a week, whereas the new Digitizer 2000 website, you know, I've sometimes got 3 features a day. So it takes a bit more thinking about, really. But, you know, I tend to do that as I'm dropping off to sleep, and, you know, sometimes it's annoying. Sometimes I will have an idea that I kind of go, hey, I can't wait to write that, and then I'm kind of awake instead of falling asleep. So, I mean, I've got a thing for tomorrow that I'm doing that I'm quite excited about, but
It's not names beginning with C, is it?
Well, no, it's not. It's How Racist Is Street Fighter. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Excellent. We could workshop that now, but yeah, that's... Oh, that's brilliant. We got a scoop, but then by the time this is out, everyone would know it's another great post. So,
Great post that's been lost. Lost by the sheer weight of crap that I put up on there. Crushed beneath it.
Oh, so is Digitizer 2000 everything that you expected and more, or is there still a work in progress? Are you where you wanted to be with it at this point in time?
It's getting there. I mean, I think I know kind of what it is now. I wish I had more time to spend. I mean, it sounds ridiculous because I do a lot on there. And it's weird. The more work I've got in my day job, the more I do on Digitizer 2000 because it's just sheer procrastination. Instead of going and having a life, I will kind of break away from writing a script or something like that I'm meant to be doing and just, hey, write another Digitizer 2000 post. It sounds completely counterintuitive, but it is helping me kind of with a day job, really, having that distraction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting there. I like the mix of kind of silly stuff and slightly more sort of heavy personal stuff. I think that's good. You know, I'd love to find a way to monetize it properly just so I could kind of really make it what I want it to be. You know, I'd love to do more videos. I'd love to have time to relearn Photoshop so I can kind of put up sort of silly fake adverts and stuff like that. That's something I'd really love to do, make it sort of more visual but with kind of more original visuals.
So it'd be just like the original Digitizer, but updated for the year 2000?
Yes, the year 2000, the space year 2000 AD.
Actually, yeah, that's a good point. Why 2000? Why Digitizer 2000 and not 2010?
Because to me it still sounds futuristic. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek. It's clearly not futuristic, it's Digitizer. It's sort of based on a really old thing now. But, yeah, Digitizer 2000 would have sounded futuristic when Digitizer first started. So that's why.
It's funny, because what will probably happen now is Jason Robertson will uncover a page where you actually have the phrase Digitizer 2000.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, so you'll have probably mentioned it on the original Digitizer. You were planting the seed for people to go and visit your website in the future.
Yes. Well,
you could say that at 8 o'clock every night there was a Digitizer 2000.
Yeah, very good.
Digitizer 2000000, to be precise.
Oh, look, it's Digitizer 8 o'clock in the evening.
Yes.
Let's all meet up at 8 o'clock in the evening. Won't it be strange when we're all fully grown?
Thank you for that, Jarvis. I'm glad we're talking about Digitizer again. Because
that's how he really talks, anyway.
Hello, I'm Jarvis Tucker.
Oh, dear. If Digitizer were a podcast, eh? Brilliant.
Hey, so
I'm glad, I'm glad we're talking about Digitizer again, because Digitizer, while it wasn't quite as naughty as the After Hours service, it was still very, very naughty indeed. And I quote a certain Mr. Prose?
That's me.
Digitizer ceased to be a job and became a way of entertaining ourselves. We'd have competitions to see who could swear the loudest without getting into trouble, or suddenly attack the boxes under our desk with a tennis racket.
Yeah.
Or fling grapes at the wall on the far side of the office, or ring colleagues and play sounds from the Mega Drive version of The Jungle Book down the phone at them.
It's Baloo the Bear! That was my favourite. He's to ring people up and play. It's Baloo the Bear!
So is that the naughtiest it got in the Digitizer office then?
Well, yeah, shouting the... here's another nickname for you, Carl. The C word across the office. As loudly as we can. If you ever remember the Dick and Dom game, Bogies, have you ever seen that?
Yeah,
we basically did that with the C word in a busy professional environment that was paying our wages.
And a young Dick and Dom were male boys in that room. They probably saw what you were doing and thought, right, well, we can't use the C word, we can use something else.
The B word. They were male boys as opposed to female boys. Like they are now.
Tuesday, July the 4th. My dad has started breeding koi carp. Given that we live in a third floor flat, I had to question the wisdom of this. But he seems pretty confident that he's going to grow the biggest carp in the world. To date, my father has bred one carp, which he has named Kiki Little. Even though she is only 5 days old, Kiki Little is already quite large. In fact, she is so large, Dad has had to move her from a brandy glass to a pint glass.
Is that it?
Yes. We've still got 310 pages of this, if you want me to continue.
I'd forgotten those were in there. That's what I know.
How to derail a conversation.
I rediscovered the digitizers through, there was a BT internet page. I won't dig it out now because it's rude to click when you're recording, I guess, but Superman 58 page or something like that.
Superpage 58.
That's the one, yeah, and that's when I discovered your work, and on the back of that, I bought your book and everything, because although I was a digitizer reader, I owned a Spectrum. Because you didn't do Spectrums, and I think I actually took your work very seriously when I was younger, and I read that someone couldn't load up a Spectrum, they couldn't load up an Amiga game in their Spectrum because it wouldn't fit in a tape player, and I just looked at it all with disdain and didn't read, carry on reading after that. So I was like really upset. So
I'm sorry. What were you looking for Spectrum games in 1993?
Yeah, I had a plus three. I got a plus three for Christmas. I was determined to find something.
Oh, Amstrad, yes.
I was that guy, but I never wrote in or anything. I didn't think those people actually existed. But these Amiga people that you've alluded to, were they actually a thing? Did they actually exist?
Yeah, they were furious. I mean, they really were furious with us. We had phone calls and, God, the letters just didn't stop. They were absolutely livid that we said we were only going to cover consoles. Yeah, because the previous games pages on Oracle, they covered the Amiga, but we didn't have any way of playing Amiga games, so yeah, it was on its way out, but
I guess you can only review Sensible World of Soccer only once or twice, can't you? And that was the only killer app that was available for it at that time.
That was the only game
that was the only, and Speedball too.
What was that, was it Shadow of the Beast, that one?
Oh, yes, Shadow of the Beast. The Altered Beast or Shadow of the Beast?
Altered Beast was Mega Drive. Shadow of the Beast, Hypnosis, wasn't it? With the kind of Yes album cover style graphics.
Yes. and Pirates. No, I didn't know some of them. Sid Meier's Pirates. I never known it Sid Meier's Pirates. I had one cracked by Cortex. It came in a plain envelope.
You should see a doctor about that.
Hmm?
You've got a crack.
Yeah, well, I will. First thing tomorrow, I promise. I think I'll need my side sewing back up again while I'm there. So, yes, okay. So let's see what else is in your secret pockets then while we've got you.
Oh, actually, yes. Viewers of Digitizer were encouraged to send letters to a gentleman known as the man with a long chin wearing pink beret, who rewarded them with a gift from his, you guessed it, secret pocket. So, Paul, I read that yourself and your partner in crime, Mr. Tim Moore, were so naughty that you even made the sweet and innocent E.T. the Extraterrestrial swear. And I really, really hope this isn't true. Please tell me it isn't.
Well, it wasn't me. It was Tim. I don't think I've ever laughed so hard. If anyone who is listening to this has ever been to Universal Studios in Los Angeles or Florida, I think they've actually got rid of it now, but there was a ride, E.T., I can't remember, E.T.'s Big Adventure or something like that, which is, that's actually a really sweet, sweet ride. It's very bizarre at the end. You go to E.T.'s planet on a BMX bike. As you're lining up for the ride, you have to apply for your intergalactic passport, and they ask you for your name. And Tim, I don't know if he knew what was coming or what, I don't know, we all kind of gave our name, and then Tim told the woman behind the desk his name was Bollock. I don't know if she thought he was like Eastern European or something like that. I still remember the look on his face when he said it. Like, it kind of, just sort of like not quite making eye contact and kind of biting his bottom lip. Yeah, but then anyway, so we're all like, did you just tell that woman your name was Bollock? Anyway, so you go on this ride and, you've got E.T. in the basket in front of you and you kind of fly up over the town. And at the end of the ride, E.T.'s vanished from your basket and he's standing on a rock in his home planet. And I've gone with Violet Berlin and her then boyfriend. And Tim, so the four of us on this four-person bike. And E.T. was there, and as we're just flying past E.T., he says, "Be good, Paul. Be good, Violet. Be good, Bollock." It was brilliant.
Anyway, brilliant. Brilliant.
Quite a long story. That was, we were there, but we weren't just there for a jolly. We have been sent there on work business.
Did you ever regard anything you ever did for Teletext as work?
No. Well, no. Not really. Well, yeah, when I had to do graphics and when I had to go and sit in the editor's office for 3 months working on the website, that was horrible.
Oh, right. So is this specific content for the website?
Designing the logos and stuff.
Okay. Oh, the design. Oh, did you do the design for the original Teletext website?
Yeah. Well, they sent me on a Photoshop course, and it was all, I think, part of a ploy to get me away from Tim, really, more than anything else. I can't imagine why.
Who's Tim? I thought his name was Bollock.
Bollock. Bollock Moore.
Bollock.
More Bollock.
Was he a nightmare?
Tim?
No, Bollock.
Oh, was Tim a nightmare? Yeah. bit much.
I haven't even met the guy. I can't make a judgment.
He sounds like a nightmare, this Tim. Making E.T. say Bollock and stuff. What? Who is he?
He sounds like a right bad bloody influence, mate.
Sounds like a mare.
You're hanging around with the wrong crowd, you are.
You need to go sit in the editor's office, mate.
Yeah, that's it. Work on a website. Come on, we're on web one now. Nice and safe. You can use Comic Sans and no one wants to kill you.
Remember the days.
Oh, different times. Mm.
Did they ever ask you to put any of the stuff from Digitizer online? So was there ever a Digitizer section at teletext.co.uk?
Yeah, there was. Someone found it, or it's archived on, I don't know, is it the Wayback Machine or whatever it's called. It's still there, a lot of it. We even had a game on there, a sort of point and, well, it wasn't point and click adventure, but it was a kind of like a...
A no point and click adventure.
Yeah, a no point and click. It was a kind of racing game, but a maze game at the same time. It was rubbish. But yes, it's online somewhere, bits of the website with kind of reviews and features and things. Some of it was lifted from Teletext, but some of it was original.
We'll seek that out and have a look at that, for sure. Yeah.
Yes, and we encourage all the people out there in Teletext land to do the same, because It's likely that I'll actually put a link in the description, so you can click it and you can play the wonderful game, and then post a review on your website, giving it 1 star out of 10, mm-hmm. and the tables will then be turned on Mr. Biffo.
Oh, it's the ultimate irony. That's karma, that is.
That doesn't begin with C, though, does it?
Seymour. That's all I'm going to call you from now on. Seymour.
Oh, sound like some scout leader.
Thank you, Seymour, for helping me tie this knot.
Oh, dear. Seymour. Well, I sound like some Czechoslovakian discount chain.
Someone called Bollock might work in.
Can Bollock come to check out, please? Bollock, Seymour, how much is Seymour?
So, guys, are any of you fans of the teletext soap Park Avenue?
I did read it occasionally, yeah.
Ah. Well, for those out there who aren't sure what this is, Park Avenue was Britain's only written soap, and it finished on its 1,445th episode with the words, "Well, bugger me," said Cathal, putting an end to an almost 4-year saga of exorcism, rape, violence, love and tenderness. And that was copy and pasted from a fantastic website known as heraldscotland.com. And the article is Goodbye to Oracle and Innocence, if you want to go and look that up. Once again, we'll probably give you a link in the description, depending on how lazy I am.
So what were the last words, Dan?
They were, "Well, bugger me," said Cathal.
Oh, I'm wondering if that's a programmer's annotation. He wanted to debug or something. Oh, debugger me.
Who said it? Cattle.
Cattle. Cattle. Cattle. Cattle.
Cattle.
Want some cattle, said it en masse.
Sounds like E.T.
Garlic phone home.
So, that leads us into a segment I like to call You Can't Say That on Teletext. We have a question for Paul. What words could you get away with saying on Teletext? What's the dirtiest word that you ever wrote on Teletext?
I've got a feeling we did get away with fart and crap, but it would always depend on who you had sub-editing that day. You definitely did. I'm sure we had both of those, but other times we got them removed.
Did you ever have Bollock's name on there?
No, not as far as I know.
But it's his name. If somebody had a rude name, did you ever have to censor it? So if his name was Peniston or Barry Shitpeas, did you ever have to censor it?
Well, thankfully that never arose as far as I know.
Anybody from Scunthorpe as well, if you've got the right justification not working properly, you could actually write something like Scunthorpe and actually have the S hyphen and then the rest of it on the next line.
Yes, that would be rude, wouldn't it?
You could spell rude words out just by the first word of every paragraph, the first letter spelling something or something
like
that.
I did do that on my last week there. I did have it down the left-hand side of the page, everything spelled out, a rude word on one of the pages.
What was the word?
Oh, I mean, have a look, because my final digi is up online. I can't remember which bit on there it is, but if you look, it's really weirdly written. People must have just thought, what? Because I was making people laugh. It's like, oh, everyone went on about the real turn of the worm being sick. But there was other stuff on there, and no one noticed that. It was such a pain in the ass to write, because trying to get all the kind of words to match up so that they spell out filth down the left-hand side, and no one noticed that. I mean, an amazing effort.
I can't think of anything beginning with W I can put in this sentence.
Yeah, basically, that's what it was.
That could possibly be the most profane thing that's ever been printed on Teletext, and nobody has found it yet.
Yeah, it's on there.
That's a Twitter handle, then, for anybody who's got this far in a podcast, can tell us what it is, and perhaps not use the C word anymore.
I got the word Bellend. We got that out there regularly. Because Mr. Nude, who did the tips, he lived in a town called Bellend.
Was he the Fresh Prince of that town?
He was indeed. The freshest of the princes. Yeah, oh no, it was Bellend's nudist camp in the town of Peens. Spelled P-E-A-N-S, which isn't a rude word, but sounds like it should be.
I thought it was pronounced Bellend.
Bellend. Bellend.
Bellend.
Yeah, a nudist camp in the town of Peens.
Well, we've had a couple of teletext screenshots sent to us by Rusty Russ, who you may remember from the last show. He was on for a good 50 minutes, and we chatted to him extensively about the history of teletext. And he actually captured a rude story on CFAX, which I'm going to read for you right now. So see if you can spot the rude word. This is on the tune-in section, the TV/radio news section on CFAX, page 591. And it goes like this. Blue letter day for BBC's Postman Pat. A sharp-eyed visitor to the BBC's Small People exhibition in London uncovered an embarrassing secret about children's cartoon favourite Postman Pat. Jessica Manning spotted a parcel in Pat's van addressed to Farmer John Higgins at a place called Piss Up. She pointed it out to Broadcasting House staff and the parcel was removed. The BBC says the letter was probably a prank by the animators who worked on the first series in 1981 and must have been sitting unnoticed in Pat's van ever since, reports the Metro paper. Well,
there you go.
That is nothing compared to some of the stuff that you had on Teletext. I got this up thinking, this is literally going to not just piss up, but piss on everything that Biffo mentions tonight. It's going to be the rudest thing, the most lewd thing in the whole episode, but no, just relatively tame, that, isn't it? Piss up. The fact that
Postman Pat, you know.
I mean, the raciest thing that must have got on the CFAX service must have been like a graphic by accident after 1996. Well, it's the blandest thing going, isn't it? Looking at all these archive screen grabs, you've got, like, Technicolor Dreamcoat on one side, and it's like a funeral every day on the CFAX service, isn't it? Absolute thing. So I was going to ask, actually, did you meet anyone from CFAX, and did you, you know, have any fights or anything with them, Paul?
I think I did meet David Gibbon, who wrote the CFAX game pages. I met him once at some game event. Yeah, it was awful. I cut his throat.
Oh, no.
And
that's terrible.
No, that didn't really happen. No, he was very nice. I just slashed him up a bit at the bottom.
Did he ask you for a job?
No. I can't even remember what I spoke to him about. I seem to remember him being quite shy and a bit small. And that's it.
He was a bit small. Was he tall enough to reach the keyboard at work?
Yeah, you know, so not kind of tall, but not small, a bit small.
Right, okay, so what I want to ask is that you obviously had to review a lot of games, and there was a lot of people fawning over your service to get things publicised and all that, and we know what your thoughts are on PR people and the like. So was there actually a time where it actually turned in on itself? And I'm not going for anything completely obvious here. I'm going for the point of you must have had lots of games that you felt like you had to review. But because there was only 60 words on a page on average for the teletext, was there actually any times where you had to unfairly cut a review short and like you look back and thinking, well, if only I had the extra 20 words or so to elaborate, you would have done a game a better favour. Did it actually ever work that way round? Because I know that the 60 words would perhaps work to your advantage a lot of the time because you could be sort of quite glib about some of the things that you say and you could use the defence of only getting 60 words on a page as the reason. But did it actually work the other way where you had a really good game and you wanted to really sort of gush over it but you were unable to?
Well, the really big games, I remember kind of the Zeldas of this world, we kind of gave extra pages to, so we'd do a kind of 9-page review. But I don't know, I'm always of the opinion that you don't need to write long reviews. I think all people need to know is kind of roughly what the game is and is it any good? You know, which is why if you look at most of the reviews that used to be on Digi, the first page, you know, we'd have four pages. The first page would be a load of old waffle about nothing in particular or kind of me talking about the fact I was learning to drive or something. And then you'd have two pages of stuff about the review. First page would be, this is what the game is. The second page would be, is it good or not? And then the last page would be kind of the score. And I don't think you need much more than that, which I'm a complete hypocrite because the reviews on Digitizer 2000 are actually quite long. But sometimes even with those, I just kind of think, oh, God, I'm just getting a bit bored now writing this. I should just get to the end. And some of them I have just done that. I think I did a review of some driving game, which I just kind of went sort of boom, boom, or something for kind of about 600 words and just had the score at the end or something like that. I can't remember what the game was.
I hope you did it in a Jeremy Clarkson accent as well. You went, brum, brum.
Brum, brum.
Brum, brum, yeah. On that point then, when you're, the 60 words and all that's great, and you know you can get to the point and all that really quickly, we don't have that platform anymore for people coming through and new talent coming through. And I don't know if you're sort of aware of the television at the moment. BBC Free is no longer something you can just watch. You have to see it online. What is the future for people who are trying to, you know, make a mark on themselves? I mean, I know we could have YouTube channels and have blogs and all that, but would you agree that that's not the same?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of better in some ways, you know, because when you're talking about TV, you're just asking for the tastes, or you know, or you're relying on the taste of a couple of people who are TV executives, and there are far fewer slots. And it's the whims of TV. You know, getting anything on TV is next to impossible. You know, you've got as much chance of winning the lottery. Trust me, you know, I mean, I've been doing the job for 15 years. It was a miracle I got into TV in the first place, and even being in it, it's a complete pain in the arse. You know, I mean, I love my job in lots of ways, but in lots of other ways, it's incredibly stressful and incredibly sort of demoralising because you come up with an idea. If you are going to get it on TV, well, it's probably kind of 2-3 years away from that actually happening, from having the idea. And between those two points, anything can go wrong and often does. So, you know, you work on something for a long time and then it just goes sort of tits up. Whereas on the internet, you just put out what you want and do what you want, and there's unlimited slots effectively, and you're banking on everyone liking it as opposed to kind of, you know, sort of two people going, this is good enough to be on TV. And I sort of hate that snobbishness, that attitude that this is good enough to go on television, whereas there's loads of people out there who are incredibly talented. You look at some of the stuff on the internet, it's brilliant. YouTube, I love YouTube. I probably watch more stuff on YouTube than I do on regular TV these days, and that's completely true.
What sort of stuff do you watch?
God, what was I watching tonight? There's a channel, I think it's called Strictly Dumpling, that I was watching. Is this guy, he deals with sort of Asian and Oriental food, and tonight he was doing a tour of a Japanese supermarket, and I watched that for 15 minutes this evening. Prior to that, there's a blogger in New York called, or vlogger, as they are, called Casey Neistat. I watched his latest vlog. Prior to that, I watched a vlog by a guy called Louis Cole, who has a vlog called Fun for Louis, where he just travels around the world. And, you know, they're really well shot. They don't feel like they're sort of ramming a format down your throat. They don't feel like they've gone through an entire committee before they've made it to air, because they haven't. It's just sort of one person generally. Yeah, and they edit it and they put it up and it's sort of instant and it's good and it's entertaining. You know, I'd watch that just as much as I'd watch, I don't know, a travel show with Michael Palin. You know, I find it just as interesting. So the great thing is you can do that sort of stuff without having a sort of sell yourself to a, you know, some TV commissioner, and they know this and they're terrified. People like the BBC, they're terrified. They don't understand this new world, and you know, they're sort of scrabbling around really to try and keep up with it. Anyway, that's my rant. So yeah, I think the internet, I think it's way better. I think for people who want to be creative, all right, there might not be as much money in it once you do get out there, but the cream sort of rises to the top really. And I think if you're good and you're persistent, it'll happen, whoever you are.
I'll take that on board, because my original conception would be that to get anywhere, you'd have to get recognised on a sort of like a single platform. You know, if you look at things like Twitter, and they still go for the event television, they still hope that people are watching the one particular thing, and you're not going to get that with the internet. It's all very disparate. And with the teletext, it was really down to what you could do with that one single platform, whereas with the internet, some person could have the unfair advantage of having more money than another person and perhaps being able to get their post made artificially viral on Facebook to get traffic that way, and to lose out to the clickbait, which is probably the biggest challenge for people who do have a blog on the internet. It's all well and good getting a visit, but you don't know if that visit's a bot from China or whether that's someone who's genuinely interested in something that you've got to say. And then on that, if you're not actually agreeing with what that person's point of view is and you're not up with their confirmation bias, you get the wrong sort of audience. So it must be quite a challenge to produce stuff that pleases the right sort of people for your audience.
Well, I mean, I think if you're honest to who you are, your audience will find you and your audience will be tailored to your interests. You know, you're always going to get bigots and trolls and idiots on the internet. That's inevitable, but no, you're going to get that if you're doing a TV show, you know, but you're going to get even more. What I love about it is you haven't heard of any of the bloggers or the YouTubers that I've sort of just mentioned yet. You know, they have millions of viewers, and I like that there feels like these little niches now. I like that there isn't this sort of grand, I don't know, what do you call it, sort of water cooler kind of moments. But we've got that, you know, there are the Game of Thrones out there, or I watch the big shows. You know, I don't watch Game of Thrones, actually. I should, but I haven't yet. But you know, I'm watching the new X-Files, watching that OJ Simpson drama that's on, so I do still watch the big shows. But I love that there's these other voices out there that are kind of more tailored and more niche and more laid back and casual, and you don't sort of feel like, you know, oh, I should watch this because it's important or whatever. Some people, maybe they are spending money to kind of get their stuff sort of promoted, but by the same token, you don't need a lot of money to do it. Some of the stuff I watch is incredibly amateurish. there's an incredibly popular blogger. He basically does these sort of fake how to or life hack type videos. How to basic, that's what he's called. And I don't know, either of you heard of him?
There's like a Russian guy that does the hacks as well. Is it the same one where he's
the
safety goggles?
Yeah. Safety is number one priority.
That's it.
this how to basic. He'll kind of start a video that's how to cure diarrhea or something is one, and it starts out like it's going to be a genuine thing, and it always ends up with him throwing loads of eggs around and kind of making a mess and destroying televisions and doors and things. Anyway, I really like it, and he's got like millions of subscribers. You know, he spends a lot of money on eggs and new doors, but they haven't got huge budgets. You can just go and put this stuff up there, and I don't know. Clickbait, though. Sorry, I'm just rambling on now, but clickbait is a pain, because I notice sometimes with Digitizer 2000 that I'll part of something that is just shamelessly clickbait, and it will kind of get 10,000 times the views of something that I've really laboured over. I had one thing in December that, you know, our hits were kind of like, we're talking like 200,000 a day at one point. It was insane. Wow. We never had anything close to that before or since, but it was just this one viral post that just went insane. And it, you know, yeah, okay, it was funny. It was some funny pictures, but it's sort of soul-destroying that I'll kind of write something that I think I've put my heart and soul into as a really good bit of writing, and kind of 20 people will read it. And then I'll put up some stupid list and 250,000 people fit it.
Well, I always feel sorry for those other people at the Comic-Con events that really did well on the costume but didn't get a picture that got featured in your blog.
Yes, they're an interesting bunch.
They are, aren't they? Yeah, that's a word for them.
Yes.
So, we mentioned blogs there. Paul, would you say that Digitizer was the world's first blog?
I don't know, blogs are kind of more personal, aren't they? They're kind of... Well,
yeah, you mentioned, you talked about things in these game reviews, like doing your driving lessons. So that kind of is bloggy.
Yeah, it's bloggy, but I don't know. It's like with Digitizer 2000 now. I kind of like... I've sort of dropped things like Fat Sal, who used to be kind of our angry pig, because they don't feel like they fit. People know that there's a person behind it. People know it's me now, hiding behind some angry, made-up character. Seems a bit weird, but I think what I like about Digi now is, and you know, people have seemed to have really responded to some of the sort of more personal stuff. Is it just, I want to feel like I've got a connection with the people that are reading it, and it seems to be that people reading it like that they feel they've got a kind of connection with me. So, and I've always sort of had that as well, and I think that was, I was sort of finding my way with the original digitizer into that, and kind of, even though I was hiding behind the Mr. Biffo name, and you know, it doesn't matter now, everyone knows my real name. I don't know, it just adds another layer to it if the person behind it is giving you something of themselves, I guess, which is what all good writing should be. It should have a kind of truth and honesty to it. So, I don't know, maybe I've answered your question by saying yes, actually, maybe in some ways it was.
I'm wondering that each character was just a substitute, it was an augmented personality that you were having at the time, and like you say, you've removed your anonymity now, so you no longer need half the characters because you're actually shooting from the hip.
Yeah, I think partly it's difficult, and I've thought about it quite a lot, because I have dropped a lot of the characters, and when the blog started, I kind of had them all on there, but people didn't respond to them really in the way that I expected. You know, Mr. T, yeah, you know, people kind of liked him, but over time they stopped reading Mr. T, and you know, when I'd do him, and I had Zombie Dave on there in the early days, and Mr. Nude and stuff, and people just didn't seem as interested as when I'd write something that, as you say, sort of shot from the hip. So I've sort of been slightly steered by what people seem to want and what people seem to respond to on there. It's good because it doesn't then feel like it's just an exercise in nostalgia and just an exercise in kind of reeling out the greatest hits. Although I know that people do still like those, and you know, hence we sell the T-shirts on the site, Mr. T and Zombie Dave and people.
For sure.
Yeah, are they available currently?
They are available currently, and they're very cheap and affordable, and they're very nice. So go and buy some, please.
Dan, I'll let you into a secret, Dan. I might have to buy another one so I qualify for that free sticker. I seem to have missed out the first time round.
Did you not get a sticker, Carl?
No, I didn't get a... No, I didn't get a sticker, mate. No, oh, that's all right.
Well, can you hear that? That's a bag of stickers. They're on the desk next to me.
I'm surprised you've got any left.
I've got some of both left now, because I found a load of the original ones in my pocket, because I took them up to the Retro Games Expo thing up in Manchester.
Not in your secret pocket.
Sticky pocket. Yeah. So I was going to say that. I was going to reveal something then.
Reveal me do.
Well, I don't know. We were talking about the possibility of doing some sort of meetup with some sort of digitizer event, and it's been something that I've been thinking about quite a lot, and how to do it. And one of the current idea that's floating around, which one, or maybe the both of you know about this, but your listeners probably won't, is doing a kind of digitizer quiz night as part of it. And as part of that, I'm currently toying with a few different ways of bringing some of the digi characters to life on stage. So there you go. That's a bit of a scoop for your...
Oh, brilliant.
What a scoop! Unfortunately, it'll be well out of date by the time people pick this podcast up in the year 2027.
I just look forward to doing something and meeting up for sure, definitely.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to Minitel and Mini June.
Paul, if you have another kid, you've got to call it Minitel.
Minitel.
Yeah.
Bigtel and Minitel.
Minitel Rose.
I'll be sure to do that.
By which he means he won't. And on that note, Saturday, April the 6th, you'll be glad to hear I've had the ghost exorcised from my flat. I tried praying to God to make the ghost go away, but when that didn't work, I prayed to Satan. That didn't work either, though I did get mugged on the way home from work. So I prayed to the associate producer of Songs of Praise, which finally seemed to do the trick. Loopy Lisa, 10:34 a.m.
Aww.
Aww.
Yes. Aww. Excellent.
That's a very somber note on which to finish. And, well, yes.
I feel like we've all really learned something today.
Yes, of course. And this has been a very revealing podcast, because it's been the After Hours edition, remember. A Reveal Me Do edition, if you will.
And we're going to be looking out for that rude word in the final service of Digitizer, which we got the screens uploaded for. So we'll have a look through that.
Good looking, folks.
Good looking. There's a prize out the secret pocket.
Some mucus from my secret pocket.
It's a stolen Nintendo Super Gun.
Oh. I'm still angry about that.
Do you have time to tell us about that, or do you have to go?
Oh, I can tell you quickly. The thieving bastard of a security guard, a Teletech, stole our Nintendo Scope 6, allegedly. I'm the one alleging it. I know it was him.
Do you reckon he still uses it?
I'd use it on him.
He's got still the rest of the stuff, like the cartridge and things, surely.
He stole it. Oh, he stole loads of stuff. If that is indeed what he did, I'm alleging this.
You're alleging it.
He used it to hold up a bank, allegedly.
He's a very strong security guard to hold up a whole bank.
Well, the Scope 6 was a very impressive and strong, durable piece of hardware.
Mm. I say.
Oh, very durable.
Oh, Scope 6 you in a minute.
Well, unfortunately, that concludes our activities for the evening. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk at you all for the last hour or so here on Teletext R. So, Carl and Paul, how did you enjoy it, or not, as the case may well be?
I enjoyed it. That was 11 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, 11 out of 10 for me. I'm sweating. I enjoyed it so much.
This segment of the Teletext Star podcast is sponsored by Jacobs, bringing you quality clock crackers since 1974.
You like your water biscuits, you like your ship biscuits, you like your Jacobs, you like your clocks. How about a Jacobs clock cracker? A perfect snack for your Teletext needs.
It's cracking.
It's absolutely crackers.
Ho ho!
Ho ho!
So, Carl, I hope we didn't peak too early with that episode of the Teletext Star podcast.
We're not going to peak too early on that, because there's plenty of more guests and more content to come.
Oh, really? Can you furnish us with those?
Not yet. It's a secret.
Well, that's a good point, actually. If you want to be featured on the Teletext Star podcast, just get in touch with us at the Teletext Star Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/teletextgroup, all one word. Or contact us on Twitter at teletextr. So that's teletext and the letter R right after it. No underscores or crap like that. And you'll get right through to us.
That's brilliant. I'm all talked out then. That's just absolutely brilliant.
And now, the outtakes. Did he ever tell you the story about how I was once live streaming and a mouse ran across my peripheral vision and scared me half to death?
No, you never told me that.
Well, it's live on...
So what happened?
Well, I was broadcasting live on the internet. I was doing a video game live stream, and all week we'd been having problems with a mouse. There was a mouse living somewhere in the house. It had got in, and it was hard to catch because it would never come out in the day. It would only come out about 10 o'clock at night. So if you failed to catch it one night, you've got to wait 24 hours. This went on for flipping ages, and I never saw this mouse for about 3 days, and I thought, oh, it's gone. It's cleared off. But then, at about 10 p.m. one evening when I was live streaming, it was there. It went flying across the room. Rah!
They're not slow, are they, mice? They do zip across.
And I eventually got it with one of the old... Thing is, it's the plastic mousetrap. It's terrible. But we got a wooden mousetrap, and it got it first time.
Older technology, you see.
Yeah. A link to the teletext there. Yeah, so that is actually on the internet. And
what have you, having the holy living daylight scared out of you by a mouse?
Well, it's not that bad. It's just, that's what happens. Everybody made this huge thing about it.
Oh, hello.
Oh. Good evening.
Hello.
It's Mr. Digitizer.
It is, and I just popped in as I heard someone talking about making a huge thing out of it. One of my stumbled into here.
He's talking about his altercation with something furry at 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, good Lord, that will make a huge thing out of it.
Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you?
Yes, I'm very well. How are yourselves? That was a very long pause.
That's a bear joke in there somewhere.
Because I'm in Antarctica and the signal has to reach me. It has to bounce off the satellite.
It has to bounce off your pole. Sorry, I don't know. I do apologise.
The South Pole?
Mr. Rose is in his smut room tonight.
Here he is. Did you say the mouse is called Ormos? That's what it sounded like. Ormos called Ormos.
Sorry.
Oh, crikey.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
This episode won't need any editing whatsoever.
Leave it alone.
Right. Shall we get back to teletext? Right. <Yeah. clears throat> No.
No, it was our horse. High gaming wheels.
He just failed to get his leg over.
Please stop.
Oh, brilliant.
Almost the mouse.
Must get some oil for the door.
Has he gone? Where? What's going on?
Crikey, yeah. New shoes.
Oh, it's a very strange end. We just stay here for a while.
Can you finish a blog post like this? Just stop writing. Everyone just look round and go. What? What?
Huh?
What?
Have we done?
Slithering around the room.
No, what was my pet mouse's name again?
Ormos.
Ormos. Sorry, yes.
Ormos and Ormos.
Yeah, sorry, that was my pet mouse, Ormos.
No, my mouse is called Our Horse, because it was a 99p one from eBay. It's Our Horse High Gaming Mouse. Oh, and then Paul said it's an Ormos. Is it an Ormos? Is it like an enormous mouse? But yeah, it changes colour and everything.
Oh, from brown to white.
Are you sure it's not the other way around?
I don't tell you how it changes colour, but change it does.
So there you go, it's my oral mouse. I'll have to... I'll have to tweet you the picture.
Oh, please, yeah.
You'd like that.
Both colours, both hues.
Oh, hue and cry.
Oh, dear. All right, then, gentlemen.
Right.
Thank you so much for coming on our podcast this evening, Paul.
That's fine, Dan. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank
Cracking.
You.
All right, cheers, gents.
Cheers, bye.
Bye, cheers. Bye.